Hi, everyone. Welcome to Deep October. I love this month. I've always loved October. It may be my favorite month. And I think that's always blossomed from the fact that ever since I was a little girl, I loved fancying myself a witch. And I mean that in the most celebratory and life-giving sense of the word. That's just a really endearing archetype to me. So Halloween, the witchy time, the mysterious time, that's always really rich for me. And it feels very feminine in the spiritual, soulful sense to me as well. And if you've been following along, you know I've been talking about Persephone and the deep underworld experience of her queenly nature recently, and we will expand on that today and in ways that I hadn't even anticipated. So that's what we're about today. But just to give you a few little pointers about what my month has been about, because I think it lends to what's happening in the podcast today, I've started walking in my cemetery again. My cemetery. It's Riverside Cemetery, which is close to our house. And if you've followed in the podcast before, I've talked about it. I just love it. It's such a great space to be in. All these windy trails and the foliage is spectacular. It's glorious in any season, but right now it's just extra special. And because we've had our puppy, I haven't been able to go there as often, but I've made it a point to walk Tippy in the morning, and then my husband exercises her at night, and I just go myself now to the cemetery. And with all my communing with the Persephone myth and archetype, and just this time of year, and the deep feminine, and these mysteries, it is so richly rewarding to be in the cemetery right at dusk. And I'm usually listening to something inspirational or interesting or just fun, or sometimes I just walk in the quiet. So wherever October is finding you right now, I hope that you're having some deep, mysterious, soulful connection with yourself and leaning into that mystery. My mom, a long time ago when I was going through a really difficult time, we were in San Francisco on a family trip, and I remember looking out over the bay and I said, I just love fog, and I do. And then, you know, later in that day, I was talking about something difficult in my world at the time, and she's like, remember that you like fog. And I was like, touche, mom, touche. I do like fog. I do. And so I just have to like it when it's happening in the inner space as well, which can sometimes take courage. But I find that continuing to do so, continuing to lean into that discipline and that focus that you and I have been talking about all these sessions together, it's just continuing to reveal parts of myself that I'm really liking becoming acquainted with, and seeing the fruit of the focus labor of questioning what the mind is doing and disciplining the patterns of the mind. When that fruit reveals itself, and certainly it's on its own timetable, it's really exciting, and it's own reward. And I'm feeling a lot of that right now. I still have many, many questions, and maybe more today than ever, but I'm learning, as Rilke says, to sort of live through the questions, let the questions live me and discover them when they're flowering in my experience. So just a few opening thoughts with that. My parents also have been part of my October. Mom and Dad came about a week and a half ago, and they spent 7 days here. They flew into Charleston, and we met them there and spent a few days by the water and in old Charleston, which was fantastic. And then they spent quite a few days here in Asheville. And it was such a lovely time. We had so much fun and ate a lot of great food. And it's wonderful to be a tourist in your own home again sometimes and revisit with new eyes again your surroundings, not just your habits. And it was really fun to have them here, and I appreciate them making the trek all the way to the East Coast. And I think they had fun. So that was lovely. And I have an interesting interview coming up at the end of the month, and I'll tell you more about that in the days ahead. But all kinds of things are happening, and I just continue to travel overall with this deep feminine right now, and we'll dive more into that today. But as usual, let's situate ourselves with the moon. We just have a few days left of the Hunter Moon. So I'll read my poetry about the full Hunter Moon and then the waning Hunter Moon. And the Beaver Moon will start early next week. It's just amazing. If ever I am contemplating a decision and I'm feeling any uncertainty, I tell myself to wait for a moon cycle. And that usually does the trick. And really, it's such a quick amount of time, or, you know, it feels like it passes so quickly, even though it's so full and rhythmic and lush, each moon, each cycle, each phase. But for whatever that's worth, if that's helpful, here's what I wrote about the full moon. Under the Hunter Moon's clouded light, the approaching Day of the Dead. How fitting. Our culture has a particular aversion to death. Her lessons are hard, of the bone, utterly penetrating. And yet she is constant, the great leveler. Our one real choice is to relate to her, somehow. In celebrating Dia de los Muertos, the very best food is set out for the ancestors and the departed beloveds. Their spirits are courted and celebrated. Color and sugar skull, flicker of candle, incense trailing up into the night. The veil between this side of life and the mystery is whisper thin. Perhaps we can open to death with dancing and learn a step of her rhythm in a moment of our choosing. And then the waning moon. And what is left now is the hush of the tomb. Sweet exhale, the void. In the nourishing dark, I know no stranger. In the nourishing dark, my mind ceases to struggle and fight. In the nourishing dark, I will meet the child who never could, but who now can. My sense is when I wrote that, I was touching internally on rebirth of some kind in reference to the child. And certainly with our Persephone work of late, that is the theme. You know, there is a rebirth happening in that deep bone silence. And it takes courage to be with that, to be with that, and not try to rush around and fill that process with activity. That process is not on our timetable. It is something we allow to live itself through us. And if you haven't gone to my website recently, I've updated the bookshop. I've updated a lot of the images, and I'm just really enjoying the imagery and the titles I've put up in the bookshop right now. Take some time if that feels right to you and just see what's happening there. Image is so powerful when we don't know what else to do. To have an incredible image, to be following the dream life, these are all great assists as we allow this deep work to do its thing. So I hope you are well. And if you too are sort of in a seasonal contemplative space, I'm thinking of you because I know it's deeply rewarding and at times deeply challenging. So wherever you're at, I hear you. I hear you in the stillness. And so today I'd like to touch on a few ideas that are still very much evolving in me. So, you know, this is going to be an ongoing conversation, but I had mentioned, I think maybe last time, the heroine's journey. And there are a couple books out regarding that, and, you know, more and more all the time. But Maureen Murdoch is one of the first writers to really explore this concept of the heroine's journey being a little bit different, or massively different, than the hero's journey. And, you know, it's different and not both, because, again, we come to that paradox that we all have the internal masculine and the internal feminine. So there's rich material, whatever gender, whatever expression you are, in all of these depth psychological approaches, mythological approaches to our individuation and maturation as adults, as thriving adult people. But the heroine's journey is different, and I want to touch on that today. And Maureen Murdoch's book is posted in the bookshop if you want to connect with that. And remember, you know, obviously get it from the library, whatever. If you do get things through my bookshop, it's contributing to indie bookstores. So I always like to say that because I think that's really important. I really appreciate local bookstores. So having said that, I want to talk a bit about how the hero and heroine's journey are different. Again, under that larger umbrella, that they're all relevant to us in different ways and in different moments of our lives, if you appreciate the depth, psychological, and mythological perspective. So, you know, it certainly helps you understand your internal dynamics, psychologically speaking, and also, you know, those close to you in your external world, what they might be going through in terms of these journeys as well. And it's important to emphasize that Joseph Campbell really pioneered a lot of this work, and Maureen Murdoch, again, has done a huge service to contributing the thoughts about the feminine journey. These are not linear processes. They're very cyclical, and they don't always proceed according to the steps, as we talk about that here today. So just keep that in mind. And also keep in mind, again, from the depth psychological perspective, as we approach myth and these different theories, it's important to remember that these theories themselves are evolving and expanding. Our ideas of the gods continue to evolve and expand. And different moments in history are requiring different adaptations to the previous models. So as humanity is evolving, so are these models. So are these ways of interacting with the models. And that really landed for me as I've sat with this information in this month and continue to, because if you, again, have been following in my podcast, you know that I affectionately refer to sort of three groups of people in terms of how we're evolving in terms of individuation. And I call that first bucket plank on head, meaning a really dense sort of tribal group think mentality. which we have all been in, and eventually move on to the next phase, which I affectionately called certified life coach phase, which means you start learning, you know, psychology and boundaries and all those things that are really important about externally improving upon your way of viewing and interacting with the external world. So that's conscious communication. There's all of those wonderful tools, love languages, you know, depth psychological perspectives. There's all kinds of fantastic information there. And we start to become wiser to ourselves and more skillful. And then ultimately there is what I call the I am space. And that's really an internal mystical space where you may be going on the hero or heroine's journey in the previous categories, but it's very cosmically oriented. I even hesitate to use that word, but you know, in terms of the big questions, this last category, if you're traveling the hero or heroine's journey at that time, that's about those really, really big quantum realizations of the self with the capital S. I'm guessing, and I'm very much a student of this, so I am integrating these concepts as I'm sharing them with you, so I may, you know, shift my perspective a bit, but today I would say that we can undergo hero and heroine's journey at different points of, you know, the individuation process at different points, at different levels. So in other words, what I mean by that is maybe in certified life coach, you are undergoing the hero or heroine's journey on certain levels of your life, and it's really profound and it's meaningful, and it definitely advances and contributes to your evolution and largesse as a human being. Doing so in the I am space is really deep work. And that's what the mystics are talking about. And you're really beyond any kind of language to sort of grapple with that. So you have these maps of the territory. But if you are in a space where you're in that more I am identity that we've talked about in the past, where you are really coming into a fierce protocol with your mind about what identities, what thought systems that you are keenly aware of policing, if you will, and opening to that. Again, all of this is in past podcasts, so if you are a little bit adrift, just revisit some of the things I've already talked about in previous episodes regarding these three categories. But if you are undergoing the individuation process in this I am space, there isn't a lot of language to talk about it. It's quite mystical. And so let me give you an example what I'm saying. I've often referred to Neville Goddard and his work, and he was lecturing in the 40s and 50s, and has been such a profound influence on me. And he did a lot of work on manifesting, quote unquote, and how to use the mind really skillfully. So I would say, you know, he was a lot in that certified life coach space. But then at the end of his life, he was speaking about the I am, sort of this total surrender to the divinity within. And it shifted the conversation from being able to, quote, manifest something in a one-off scenario to basically living an entire life from the capital self space. So it wasn't just manifesting a good outcome here and there and being skillful with that. It was moving into an I am divinity space where your whole life then is suddenly a reflection of that which is most sacred and profound within each of us. And so that's what I'm talking about. Jung did the same thing. You know, he's doing a lot of his work, his collected works, in the written space, in the lecture circuit, talking about it in terms of psychology and texts and information he put out into the community. And towards the end of his life, it was getting increasingly more mystical. He was talking about the Gnostic Sophia. He was talking about Job, answer to Job, and increasingly more mystical aspects of his work. I see that same arc with him. So I'm not saying, oh, I'm in the I am space. I mean, I'm wrestling with those ideas. Let me just say that, because it's something you just don't say glibly or certainly in any kind of conceited way. But I do know that that conversation is having a gravitational pull on everything I do right now. So I increasingly am shifting from that certified life coach external way of understanding myself into this more mystical space. And, you know, and I say that whilst trying to keep all of this really grounded and relatable, because I want to share. It's nourishing to me to share. And there's so much of it that can't be shared because it's your individual walk, it's my individual walk. But I think it's helpful to share some meaningful discussion about it. And I just think that the color of the hero and heroine's journey, if you're engaging with it in that more I am space where you're really sort of in the deep underworld and embracing egoic death on a profound level, it has a really big gravitational pull that maybe just an intellectual concept of it in other areas of your life, even though that also has tremendous value, when this is at the experiential level of the I am category, I mean, it's massive. And I've noticed that that word, massive, has suddenly crept into my vocabulary. I notice that sometimes when different words move in and out and I'm just suddenly using a word. Massive has sort of been my word for the last 2 months. I don't know what that means other than things feel quite massive in my underworld right now. And that doesn't mean that I'm depressed or cut off from folks. Quite the contrary, my experience of the feminine, of the deep feminine, is that you spend your time courting that experience as best you can. And to honor her is then to spend your waking day, you know, the dailiness of activities, in as much joy as possible and as much connection to just ordinary things, the beautiful season, your family, your pets, taking loving care of your body, cooking, things like that. So I don't mean for this to sound too erudite and slippery around the edges, because I feel we honor her with a capital H by really staying connected and embracing of the world. But having said that, it's also deeply mystical and it's doing its own thing, and sometimes we're along for the ride. So with that, I would like to just remind us what the hero's journey is about. And I've talked about that in previous podcasts before. I think I did an interview on that maybe a year ago, somewhere in there. You can look back at the episodes and get information on that. But I'll just remind us of those stages and then we'll talk more about Maureen Murdoch's work with the feminine. And I think in all deference and honor to Joseph Campbell, Maureen Murdoch's work, again, we'll keep in mind that this continues to evolve just as we all continue to evolve. And my Persephone infatuation and focus of late is really interesting because in Maureen Murdoch's feminine heroine arc, she talks about Inanna. And the comparison between the mythological stories of Inanna and Persephone are really interesting to me. I did not realize, and I'm going to share that with you here in a moment, what those are about, at least my beginning understandings of that, because I need to spend more time with that. But I'm just really encouraged that when you embrace this sort of work in your life, you go on the most amazing inner adventures and external adventures too, as well, but inner adventures where new worlds keep revealing themselves and exciting the soul. And it's very buoyant at times and very challenging at times. But the buoyancy is also there in the excitement and almost like, you know, a childlike awe again of all the beautiful things that are available and you have access to suddenly in this interiority. So I'm deeply grateful to be having these conversations and experiences. It's just, you know, we do the best we can with the words that we have. So with that, I'll talk about the Inanna Persephone connection here in a moment. But with that, let's revisit the stages. And again, not in chronological order, although they do kind of follow an arc, if you will, of the hero's journey. And so you have the ordinary world, and then a call to adventure, a refusal of the call. And that's the human nature, isn't it? We refuse the call. And then you meet a mentor, cross a threshold. You have the tests, the allies and the enemies. Approach the inner cave, you know, so the place of where the dragon probably is at the guardian at the gate of your interior wealth. Wealth of experience, wealth of power, all of that. There is an ordeal where a death and a rebirth happen in that cave space. There's a reward. The road back, resurrection, and you return with some kind of boon or elixir. And this is definitely the masculine, active, going out, you know, from the soul. Although it's a soulful process, it's sort of a moving out of the energy. The energy of the feminine is a very different space. And I would like to share Maureen Murdoch's overview of what that looks like, but this is deeply tied to the underworld, deeply tied. And she, in her waking life, not just her imaginal and writing life, but in her waking life, also worked with Joseph Campbell, assisted him in some manner. And she had a conversation with him, having spent some time with the heroine's journey concept in her own mind, and shared what she was discovering, that for a woman in this modern world of the past, you know, let's say from the 90s on, that she was seeing that this was a very different proposition of a journey. And let's take some cultural context and layer that in, because women are suddenly in a space where they are both keepers of the home and out in the workforce. That is certainly contributing to her ideas. And it's certainly contributing to the imbalance that women were feeling and continue to feel. And that's why I say all of these models continue to evolve with, you know, what culture you're in, what moment of time you're in, because, you know, every moment is lending a different set of realities to the journey. So it's constantly evolving. But she had this conversation with Joseph Campbell about the heroine's journey having a different color to it. And he responded that she doesn't need to go on a journey. She is the goal. And this was sort of alarming to Maureen Murdoch. Graciously, both Maureen and I'm sure she's right, knew that what he was meaning was the feminine is that integrated space of the psyche that's very close to life itself. And it is about not a hierarchical man-woman thing, but the feminine perspective in terms of the psyche being about unity and complementarity and those sorts of qualities. So I get what he was saying. She got what he was saying, but she remained steadfast that a woman going through her life at that moment was encountering this whole process very differently. And he later wrote her and said, "You've given me a lot to think about." And so I think that's a beautiful dance with honoring the work that has come before us and then continuing to work with it. And I got all that information from a fantastic podcast that I want to plug. I don't even know these folks, but they're doing a really cool podcast called The Skeleton's Keys, or Skeleton Keys. And it's Tori Yates Orr and John Booker. And they do a lot of work with myth and history. They have an amazing catalog of episodes on all kinds of topics that are very rich in my imagination, and I want to listen more. And they actually do an interview with Maureen Murdoch, and they're talking about the heroine's journey. And I'll just put a pin in this too. They talk about a recent series that was out on HBO Max called The Watchmen, and I have not seen that yet. But from their perspective, those leading the podcast, they said that this is a fantastic example of a heroine's journey. And so that like got me all excited, and I want to dive into that. And I really take their recommendation because they do so much work with myth as being really a great recommendation. So The Watchmen, that was just recently out in the last few years, a series, apparently is a really fine example of a heroine's underworld journey. So I want to honor their work. And that's where I got a lot of this information about Maureen Murdoch. And you can hear her interview on their Skeleton Keys podcast. So that is fantastic. But now I'm looking straight at the graphic from Maureen Murdoch's work. And I'm just going to read the phases of the heroine's journey, and we'll start to see how it colors differently from what I just said about the hero's journey. First, there's a separation from the feminine. Then an identification with the masculine and a gathering of allies. Road of trials, meeting ogres and dragons. Finding the boon of success. Awakening to feelings of spiritual aridity, feelings of death, initiation and descent to the goddess, urgent yearning to reconnect with the feminine, healing the feminine split, healing the wounded masculine, and then integration of masculine and feminine. So that's a lot. And I'm going to just continue to sit with that, learn from that, explore that, share that with you in upcoming episodes, but just to sort of speak largely about that arc of experience and integration, I think Maureen Murdoch's work is really resonant with me and so many other women, because there is in our culture, in our Western culture right now, definitely that drive to identify with external patriarchal ways of achieving. And that's what she's talking about at the beginning, where you reject the feminine. And, you know, whether you're just meaning you're trying to please and experience strength and power within that system. And a lot of times it's a patriarchal system, you know, not a nourishing, vibrant masculine system. It's a patriarchal one. So there's a rejection initially of the feminine, thinking that this other way is going to be how you are strong, how you are able to navigate the external world. And a lot of women have early success doing so. And there's that arc of going out into the world and conquering and being successful. And then, you know, about midlife or even earlier, there's this aridity of the soul, and you feel parched and you feel the loss of what has been missing, that nourishing sense of being and all the gifts that are latent in the shadow but are going to require meeting the shadow, so thus the descent. So here's where we come into the story, which I've been sharing with you about Persephone in the underworld becoming, after her abduction, which many scholars now feel and feel that she was knowing she needed to go through. It wasn't just a passive thing on her part, that she knew that she needed to go into the underworld. The Persephone story and her encounter with her sovereignty, there's a lot of mystery and silence surrounding what happened to Persephone while she was in the underworld with Hades. You know, what happened? There isn't a lot of information, even in the myths, about that. And so here we have Maureen Murdoch's work on the heroine's journey, and she references Inanna's story, Inanna's myth. And I just, not being hugely historical in terms of my understanding of ancient civilizations, I looked this up, and the Persephone story is, you know, ancient Greece, but we're talking, you know, 600 to 400 before the Common Era. You know, that's where this myth is alive. The Inanna story is very ancient. We're talking 4,000 to 5,000 years before the Common Era. So Mesopotamia, Sumeria, that era of time. So this is enormously ancient, but the parallels between their stories are interesting. And I was not totally familiar with Inanna's story. I'd, of course, heard her referenced as a goddess, but she goes into the underworld to meet her sister because her sister has lost her husband, and she's going into the underworld to honor his passing and to give support to her sister. And she is a queen of the upside world, of the topside world, of the heavens. But going into the underworld, she must go through 7 gates, and she is stripped of her power at each gate, thus arriving naked when she meets her sister. And there's this horrific meeting of the two, and it's definitely likened to meeting her dark shadow, her dark shadow self, the dark feminine, the Kali feminine, you know, if you wanted to put it into a different goddess term, the dismembered, evil face, you know, the horrific. And to meet that and endure what has to be endured there and to experience the rebirth of that, I need to spend a lot of time with this story, not in a laborious sense, but just being with the images and seeing their links to Persephone. Although, because this is a more ancient story, the Inanna story, I'm just throwing this out there somewhat rhetorically, I wonder if the Persephone myth coming later is an evolution of this deep feminine mystery, this deep feminine integration. So I wonder if it is a way that the story is advancing. I'll just put that out there right now. And I wonder if the Persephone story is also advancing. It feels very much to me that it is. How? I'm still in the midst of all of that. So, you know, again, honoring all that has come before us and honoring what's happening now and where it's going. So anyway, I want to read a few passages from Maureen Murdoch's book about this Inanna story, because there's some incredible language about it. And I'm just going to read straight from her text. Very ancient story of the feminine in the underworld. So I'm reading from chapter 6 in Maureen Murdoch's book, The Heroine's Journey, and it's entitled The Initiation and Descent to the Goddess. And she opens with a quote from Diane de Prima from Prayer to the Mothers. So this chapter opens with a quote from another author. And it goes, "They say you lurk here still, perhaps in the depths of the earth or on some sacred mountain. They say you walk still among men, writing signs in the air, in the sand, warning, warning, weaving. The crooked shape of our deliverance, anxious, not hasty, careful. You step among cups, step out of crystal, heal with the holy glow of your dark eyes. They say you unveil a green face in the jungle, wear blue in the snows, attend on births, dance on our dead, croon, fuck, embrace our weariness. You lurk here still, mutter in caves, warn, warn, and weave. Warp of our hope, link hands against the evil in the stars, O rain, poison upon us, acid, which eats clean, wakes us like children from a nightmare. Give the slip to the devourers, whom I cannot name, the metal men who walk on all our substance, crushing flesh to swamp." I don't even know what to say about that. I mean, that is so searing in its image. And again, we're not talking about any sort of attack on men. We're talking about deep patriarchal systems and the feminine coming into its power, but the deep shadow of it all. Because I will say this, it bears repeating, patriarchy, those old power systems that have been with us for so long, have harmed men as much as women. And there's a reclaiming happening in the psyche where we're having to meet those dark shadows, whatever orientation you are, and work with those energies and face also the gold that's in the shadow. But there's much stripping away of these really difficult layers while getting to that glorious center. But again, this is not in any way about, you know, pitting anybody against anything. We all have the wholeness of the psyche unfolding. So now I'm going to read Murdoch's words herself. "Woman's initiation. The descent is characterized as a journey to the underworld, the dark night of the soul, the belly of the whale, the meeting of the dark goddess, or simply as depression, it is usually precipitated by a life-changing loss, experiencing the death of one's child, parent, or spouse with whom one's life and identity has been closely intertwined may mark the beginning of the journey to the underworld. Women often make their descent when a particular role, such as daughterhood, motherhood, lover, or spouse, comes to an end. A life-threatening illness or accident, the loss of self-confidence or livelihood, a geographical move, the inability to finish a degree, a confrontation with the grasp of an addiction, or a broken heart can open the space for dismemberment and descent. This journey to the underworld is filled with confusion and grief, alienation and disillusion, rage, despair. A woman may feel naked and exposed, dry and brittle, or raw and turned inside out. I felt this way while fighting advanced cervical dysplasia, during the dissolution of my marriage, and when I lost confidence in myself as an artist. Each time I had to face truths about myself and my world that I wished not to see, and each time I was chastened and cleansed by the fires of transformation. In the underworld, there is no sense of time. Time is endless, and you cannot rush your stay. There is no morning, day, or night. It is densely dark and unforgiving. This all-pervasive blackness is moist, cold, and bone-chilling. There are no easy answers in the underworld. There is no quick way out. Silence pervades when the wailing ceases. One is naked and walks on the bones of the dead. To the outside world, a woman who has begun her descent is preoccupied, sad, and inaccessible. Her tears often have no name, but they are ever present, whether she cries or not. She cannot be comforted. She feels abandoned. She forgets things. She chooses not to see friends. She curls up in a ball on the couch or refuses to come out of her room. She digs in the earth or walks in the woods. The mud and the trees become her companions. She enters a period of voluntary isolation, seen by her family and friends as a loss of her senses. Several years ago, in the midst of a lecture on the heroine's journey that I was giving at Cal State Long Beach, a woman in the back of the lecture hall raised her hand and impatiently interrupted me when I mentioned voluntary isolation. "Voluntary isolation," she cried out. "You've just named what I've been going through for the past 9 months." Everyone turned their heads to see a woman in her late 40s rise from her chair with dignity. "Up until that time," she continued, "I was the owner and chief executive of a large design firm, pulling down over $200,000 a year. One day I went into work and just didn't know who I was anymore. I looked in the mirror and didn't recognize the woman looking back at me. I was very disoriented. I left work, went home, and never went back again. I spent the first month in my bedroom. My teenage sons and husband were terrified. They had never seen me like this before. I didn't even have the energy to get dressed in the morning. I couldn't shop for groceries, cook, or do laundry. I went into a period of what you call voluntary isolation." Several women nodded their heads in recognition as she continued, "Now I garden. I've never gardened before in my life, but now it is the only thing I can do. I love the earth. My family is worried about me. They want me to go to a psychiatrist, to go back to work, to smile again. They miss my income. They think I'm crazy, but I don't even hear their words. I'm finding my way back to me in the earth every time I turn it over." Wow. That is really deep and powerful. There's so much to learn here, and we'll continue to talk about this together and explore this, but we're at the most amazing time of year, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, to embrace this work. And again, doesn't matter if you're moving into the spring, but in the underworld, all is well, all is of the moment. But if you are in deep October, as I am, in in the season of autumn. This is a really propitious time to surrender to these forces if you find yourself on the arc of the heroine's story. And there's so many gifts to open to as well. And we will travel this individually and together because it's unfolding and mysterious all the way around. It's something that we will come to and share and then return and do our own work with. But this is deeply resonant for me right now. I think it matters so much in terms of the collective consciousness that we, wherever we find ourselves on these individual journeys, that we're doing the inner work with as much courage and heart as possible. I think that matters enormously to the people in our lives and to the shifts that are happening in our communities, in our nations, and in our world. And so I just dip in with you again and return to these ideas, stir the proverbial pot, and wish us all well as we contemplate and sit with these ideas. And I'm so enormously grateful that there are so many resources to sort of help as guideposts along the way, although this is something we must undertake alone. So I hope just beginning this conversation, which we will return to, and as I continue to contemplate Persephone, her journey, and then add in this Inanna's layer of the story, I'm curious about the seven gates and the stripping away, it seems to me, of the ego, the egoic layers, as we reach the deep feminine, basically naked. But what beauty and power and resurrection lies beyond that? And to be patient and to, again, return to as much heart, even if we can't feel our hearts sometimes, to lean into that unknown space, knowing that we will again at some point. That's what I have for today. It seems richly atmospheric for the time of year we find ourselves in. I'll be checking in with you before the end of October. I'm thinking my next post may be an interview, but we will be returning to this deep feminine work and this deep feminine topic often, because basically between now and the winter solstice, this is the time to really sit with these ideas and realize the experiential fruit of this inner labor. It will have external fruit as well. It will. But our sense of identity, in my experience, is deeply altered, and it is very exciting, you know, when you get to come up for air a little bit, even though you're still traveling these underworld spaces, to get a sense of who you really are. There's no substitute for that. So in the days ahead, until we visit again, I wish you well. Until next time, take good care. Thank you. Hi, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if my work is nourishing your heart and imagination, consider supporting the Apothecary Podcast. Just follow the links to make a contribution. And for the full scope of my projects and offerings, including my weekly newsletter, visit lorigreen.net.